Hi, this is Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Radio Labyrinth. You fucking pig.
It's time for Radio Labyrinth with Tim Andrews, Ira Malkin, Steph Swain, and Jeff Leboff.
Hi, welcome to Radio Labyrinth, episode 85B. That means it's not episode 85, it means it's episode 85-B. Episode 85 has already been released with everybody, and this is just me. Well, I am joined by one of my favorite comedians of all time. You've heard him on Family Guy, The Howard Stern Show, and even The Regular Guy Show. You've seen him on King of Queens, Sex and the City, First Impressions with Dana Carvey, and much, much more. He's appearing all weekend at the Punchline. For showtimes, tickets, and more, go to punchline.com. Please welcome Craig Gass. Hi, Craig.
Man, it's been way too long.
It's been way too long. I ran into you where? At the Punchline for Shaquille O'Neal's podcast.
Yeah, which was a weird story. It was, I prank called Shaquille O'Neal a couple months ago for his birthday, and I was a little confused about what I was doing that day. Our mutual friend Rob Jenners, he messaged me on Facebook. Hey man, I'm doing this thing for Shaquille O'Neal. It's going to be his birthday. Do you mind calling in next Tuesday for his birthday, doing some celebrity voices? Yeah, absolutely. And then I called in that morning, and he said, hey dude, thanks for calling, man. I really appreciate it. I'm gonna put you on hold. We'll have you on in about 30 seconds. I said, all right, cool. And who am I talking to? And he said, you're talking to Shaquille O'Neal. And I go, Shaq? I'm going to talk to Shaq. And he goes, dude, that's what I told you. I'm the producer of Shaquille O'Neal's podcast, and it's his birthday, and I thought it'd be funny if you just prank called him. And I was like, and then 10 seconds later, hello. hey, what's happening? It's Tracy Morgan. I'm going to put a baby in your butthole, or whatever. So, yeah.
Did he know that it wasn't Tracy Morgan?
Well, no, it was like Jenner said, hey, so, you know, because it's your birthday, we rounded up some celebrities who all want to check in and say hello. And then he pretended to push the button on each call. Mm. And it was just me popping in as Adam Sandler and Tracy Morgan. And then I think, Christopher Walken and maybe Alec Baldwin. I don't know. I kept saying awful shit.
Now, you do more modern voices than a lot of people. I mean, we kind of grew up in the same era. How old are you?
I'm 47.
I'm 47 as well.
Yeah.
Almost. I'll be 47 soon. So we grew up with the same guys. You get Fred Travellina, who else? Rich Little, of course.
Yeah, the dude who was on Batman. I didn't realize he was a big voice guy.
Which guy?
Wasn't the guy who was the Riddler like a big voice guy? I
thought... Jim Carrey?
No.
Frank Gorshin.
Frank Gorshin was
He was amazing, yeah.
I didn't know that. I only knew about Rich Little.
Right.
Like, when you talk about impressionists, when I was growing up, I just thought, oh, Rich Little, that's who you're talking about.
Maybe John Biner a little bit, too. Did you ever watch Bizarre when you were...
I loved watching Bizarre. Are you talking about the guy that did Super Dave? John Biner was the host.
John Biner was the host, but he did the best Ed Sullivan. And then when,
really?
Yeah, there's an old Carlin bit where Carlin's doing Ed Sullivan. He goes, no, I don't do Ed Sullivan. I do the John Biner Ed Sullivan.
He says that on an album?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Here on our stage.
What a cool tribute for Carlin to do that for him. What's funny is another comedian, Norm MacDonald, loves impressions.
He's good at it, too.
And he does impressions. He does an impression of Super Dave
Osborne. I know, and I've never heard anybody that can do it. Yeah. Can you do it?
I don't think it'd be that hard. I mean, now it kind of sounds like Bill Clinton.
But he has the pacing.
He has the pacing, yeah. And he does an amazing... I think I heard he did a Mitch Hedberg, who was my old roommate. Norm did a Mitch impression. Yeah, Mitch was my first roommate in New York when I first got there in 1998. I had opened for Mitch a few times. My role on the Howard Stern Show was growing. I went from doing celebrity phoners, really.
Was awful. That you doing Kinison back in the day?
That was my first gig with Howard. Was I'd call in to Sam Kinison. It was this is an awful, awful idea. But every time a huge asshole died, someone that we could agree, all right, that guy was just an asshole.
Right.
I would go on the air the next morning as Sam Kinison calling in live from hell,
mm-hmm.
live from the gates of hell with this dead guy. And it'd be like, hey, guys, it's Sam Kinison. I'm down here in hell with Jeffrey Dahmer, who just died. And this guy's looking at my ass like it's a T-bone. Oh!
Now, and, yeah. To me, that's amazing because, okay, kind of in Atlanta radio or whatever, I can do some impressions. I consider myself to be a mimic, not an impressionist, because you get the vocalizations, you get the facial part of it. I mean, that is Sam Kinison. No, it is. And there's no debating it. There's nobody who can do a Sam Kinison like that. That's fantastic. And I want to know how you developed that, how you got that talent. Because I always mimic. Can get maybe a sentence or two. But if I have to go off, it's a little difficult.
Well, you know about my upbringing, right?
No.
Are you serious?
Well, I read about it, but I want you to tell me the story.
I grew up in a family that everyone in my family's deaf.
Both your parents?
My mom, dad, and my sister.
Oh, wow.
Are all completely deaf. So growing up in a deaf family, I couldn't learn how to talk. For my own family, I learned how to talk by copying all the voices I heard on TV. So I've always been able to mimic any kind of voice that I hear. And I never got an accent from the Bronx.
Ah.
Which is where I'm from. And everybody in the Bronx has a very thick accent.
Right.
You know, I always say everybody in the Bronx sounds like Tracy Morgan. Everybody in the Bronx talk like this.
Right.
Whether you black or white, male or female, that's crazy. That's crazy. Hey, this is the voice of your next door neighbor, and I'm a Vietnamese girl. That's crazy. Hey, this is the voice of your neighbor downstairs, and I'm 4 years old, motherfucker. Like, yeah. It's like I always I would do impressions for my family that involved no voices. It was impressions of body language.
Uh-huh.
All right, here's grandpa waiting by the door. Here's grandpa, and it would kill.
Like, right,
I would kill for my family.
And make them laugh.
Make them laugh, I had a lot of attention to detail for body language. So when I think of an impression like Adam Sandler, I think of his body language, you know?
Right, right.
And how nervous he is, you know? And shimmy-doo, hee-hoo. Or Al Pacino slows everything down. And when he looks in your face, it's like he's looking through your fucking soul, you know?
Have you met him?
No, but I prank called him once. I did a roast of Gene Simmons and Gene's wife, Sharon. Wait. Shannon Tweed has a sister named Tracy, who is a friend of Al Pacino's. They hang out from time to time.
Sure.
And Tracy said, I don't know if you know this, but I know Al Pacino. And I go, oh, I heard. And she goes, has he ever heard your impression? I go, no. And she goes, well, let's call him. And then we called him up. Cameras were rolling. It was during rehearsal for the Gene Simmons roast. We had a bunch of cameras. So people just, some guys just walked up and started filming. And she got his voicemail. And she said, first words out of her mouth, I always remember, she said, hi, sexy.
She's calling Al Pacino sexy.
Yeah. And hey, man, you know. And she said, I'm sitting here with someone that wants to talk to you. And I said, tell him it's his brother. It's your brother. Tell him it's Al Pacino. His name is Sal Pacino, and he wants to talk to you. And then I picked up the phone. Hi, Al. Boy, oh boy, is this awkward for me. Call me back. Mom and Dad didn't tell you everything. Hoo-ah. And then I hung up.
Uh-huh.
And then she got a call back, I guess, a little bit later saying, he loved it and whatever. But I haven't talked to him. But there's an amazing story I just heard from Jay Moore that I actually share on stage.
He's another impressionist as well.
He does really great impressions. And Jay just filmed a movie with Al Pacino. And he told me this amazing story about how they're filming in downtown Los Angeles. There's a break in filming. And Al Pacino wants to take a walk to his trailer instead of being driven. And he grabs Jay Moore and he says, Jay, come on, let's go for a walk. And he goes, what? And he goes, no, just me and you. Come on, just me and you. We'll go for a walk. And he goes, I'm walking alone in downtown Los Angeles with Al Pacino at 1 o'clock in the morning. And he said when they got away from everybody else, Al Pacino slowed down and said, whoa, stop right there. Stop
Right there, Jay. You see that? That's the moon, baby. And that'll be ours forever.
What the fuck does,
what the fuck does that mean?
I don't know, but the fact that he's so in love with something so simple tickled me.
That is awesome.
You know, but, and by the way, I told you, in talking about Al Pacino, I told you the Alec Baldwin story, right?
Right, right.
That Alec Baldwin was almost got in a fist fight with Al Pacino, which was riveting.
Who do you think would have won?
Well,
Alec's got some reach on him, I would think.
Yeah, and Alec is, you know, he seems to be more built, you
right.
know, and but it's just crazy to think, like, you think of all these, like, names as iconic and almost, I don't know if the right word is autonomous, but you don't think of them interacting with each other
right.
in a negative way like that.
Because you think, oh, they're all super talented actors.
Well, it's yeah, they're all super talented actors, so they must all be friends.
Yeah.
And you don't realize, like, in radio.
Kind of like when I was a kid, I thought every black person knew each other.
Right.
Because I'm from a small town. And
but in radio, there's guys who try to undercut each other. So,
oh, yeah.
So you don't know that there are some radio guys who don't get along. Same thing in comedy. Mm-hmm. There's comedians who try to undercut each other. You don't realize that there is some kind of competition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've never felt the competition. I never felt threatened by anybody. I've always been a fan,
right?
And I love watching stand-up comedy, and I think that's one of the coolest things about being a comedian is that I can watch comedy for free and watch my favorite comedians. Last weekend, I had a couple days off in D.C., and I drove out to go watch Dave Attell perform, and Dave said, oh, hey, what are you doing here? You want to get up on stage and host the show? And I think it's my Gary Delabonte impression.
That sounded like Gary Delabonte.
Yeah. Hey, so Dave wants you to come up and host the show if you're okay with that, man. That was pretty cool.
So, I don't know. Sorry, my Dave Attell's not on point today. But so I ended up hosting the show, and I was like, absolutely. Now I'm part of the show, and I get to sit down and watch him. And I sat right off the side of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
To watch every one of his sets, and then he made fun of me every show, which was a thrill for me.
He's genius.
He is a fucking genius. And you know what is weird is he hands down, is the most brilliant guy doing stand-up comedy, and he is bored. He looks bored on
when he's
stage.
Doing it, yeah.
He's never satisfied with his material. I go out to New York. I live in L.A. I go out to New York about once a month. And at the end of my nights, when I'm doing sets around New York City, I make sure to get out to where Attell is and watch him perform. At the end of the night. He likes to go on about 1 or 1:30 in the morning. And I'll watch him every
Still.
Night. Yeah, yeah. I don't know why.
Well, they do their new – you guys do your new material late, right?
I think it's a bad idea to do it late. But Dave will go up and then I'll watch him the next night. And he'll do a lot of the stuff from the night before, but he'll completely rework it all.
Okay.
And then the next night, he'll rework it. He just did it over the weekend. He's got this new joke where he says, he was talking about anal beads. And then he said,
do you not know what anal beads are? You don't? Okay. Let me see if I can try to explain this to you. Anal beads are like finding out there's no Santa Claus 8 times in a row.
And it gets a huge laugh. The next night, he goes, anal beads are like finding out there's no Santa Claus 8 times in a row. Take that, Jews! And I went, what?
What the fuck?
And then the next night, he goes, do you know what anal beads are? You don't? Okay. Well, I'll tell you what they're not. They're not a good office gift for the holidays. And I went, what?
No, that's the best one.
And he kept reworking it
right.
and reworking it. And it's fucking mind-blowing because it was great to begin with. It was... And then I feel awful because I'm opening each show
mm-hmm.
doing what I know has kind of worked for me for the last couple months. This is what I've carved out, and I know how to do it. And if I do it in this right inflection, if we're doing math, stand-up comedians, Attell is the only guy doing advanced trigonometry.
Yeah, he's just in his head.
He's just way the fuck out there. And what's crazy is that he's not only bored. Anyone who catches his attention. He just picks up a gun and shoots him,
mm-hmm.
and then goes back into his thing.
He did a crowd work special most recently, I believe.
Did he with Big Jay Oakerson? Is that what that?
Well, it was that before Netflix started doing all these things, people were doing their own. Like Louis C.K. had one, Todd Barry had one,
yeah.
And then he did one. You buy it for $5, But it was just crowd work, the whole thing, and it was great.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I remember one night he was on stage at this club, and he's in the middle of his material, and a guy gets up and starts walking through the room to go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy he's ethnic. I can't tell what ethnicity he is. He looks a little bit ethnic, and he's wearing a white wife beater, okay? And he gets up and starts walking through the room, and Dave is talking, goes, yeah, sir, you're a member of the Albanian Olympic team. Can I ask you a question? And I was like, what the fuck? And then
you got to have a sharp brain to be like that.
3 minutes later, a guy comes down into the room from upstairs and starts walking to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy is kind of a handsome looking guy, but his suit looks a little dated. He's got a nice suit on. It just looks a little dated. And when he comes down, Dave's in the middle of something. He goes, yeah, and I just... Sir, you're a Canadian talk show host. Can I ask you a question? And I was like, what the fuck? And then another girl got up and started walking through the room with like a big summer hat.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave, right in the middle of a joke, just went, oh, look, a ghost. Anyways, and then I'm like, and he just takes out a gun, pops him, and then goes right back into his thing.
Right.
And he's fucking bored. If someone laughs too loud, he will mock you.
Right.
He mocks the crowd
for
laughing too loud. He's so ahead of all of us, and he just doesn't look happy. I can't wrap my brain around it, but it's breathtaking to watch.
I like a comedian that you have to pay attention to.
Yeah.
And sometimes they will joke. Their jokes will be like, this comes from Stephen King. His character from The Dark Tower, Roland, thinks around corners. And I think a lot of comedians do that. And you have to kind of follow them. And if you're not looking for the punchline in your head before they tell it, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
The same with Norm. I like Norm MacDonald a lot. His new special was fantastic.
Yeah, Norm had a joke once.
Can you do him? I'd like to hear it.
I'll give it a try. But right. Norm did a thing where I swear I heard it and I laughed so hard I was like, I swear, I think he had a punchline.
Mm-hmm.
And he tried to build a whole joke around a punchline just so he could say the punchline. And the whole thing was like,
I was in San Francisco, and they were doing the gay pride parade, because fucking gay people are all fucking proud, And, this guy, which is weird, because being gay, that in itself is not a big accomplishment, I mean, that's not, remember when we were kids? Remember that guy, Buzz Aldrin? That guy went to the fucking moon, And that was an accomplishment, And then when he came back, now that was a fucking parade. Now they'll let any two guys who'll suck each other's dicks get in a parade. And I was like, what the fuck?
I kind of want to backtrack. When did you get, how did you get into Howard's show and when did all that take place? Because it depends on the year whether or not I was listening. When did it start?
1995. I've been doing comedy for 2 years and radio for 2 years. I started with a guy named Bob Rivers,
mm-hmm.
Twisted Radio up in Seattle, and I put together. My mom or my sister got me the book Private Parts for Christmas, and I read the book, and I had this weird reaction of wow, I'm going to work with this guy. I really feel like I'm going to work with this guy someday. I really like this. I really identify with this guy. I'd never heard his radio show.
It wasn't out there yet.
It wasn't in Seattle. No. In fact, I worked for him for a few years without ever hearing his show. but his book was really funny to me. There were parts of it that made me laugh out loud really, really hard. So I put together a tape, and then it was a cassette tape. And you can get these station labels that had the radio station logo on it, and then you could write something on it. And I wrote Satan, and then I put it in an envelope and overnighted it to Gary Delabate. And Gary called the next day and said, "I got a message from the receptionist saying, hey, you got a message from Gary Delabate from the Howard Stern Show. He said he wants you to call him." And I was so excited because I knew what that meant,
mm-hmm.
that I went out and did coke for like a week, like coke and meth. Like
celebratory.
I celebrated.
Right.
And like every night, and honestly, it was like I knew it was a way to get free coke from people to say, you know, yeah, man, the Howard Stern show. Oh, dude.
Come on, man.
Yeah, we got a party. Yeah. And, you know, that drug habit.
And that was right after Billy West had left, right? So they needed that.
No, I think Billy might have still been there.
All right.
You know what? That's a good question. He might have just left. But
that 92 to 94
is when Billy.
Well, I mean, he was there longer than that. But that O.J. trial when he was doing Marcia Clark,
yeah.
And he was doing Ito,
and the Reds owners,
Marge Schott. They don't play that stuff anymore, by the way.
Oh, I'm fully aware of that.
Yeah.
I actually have gotten the memo on that a few years ago. But
right.
You know, there's actually a great conversation I had with Gilbert Gottfried about it, where I said, you know, Gilbert. You know, when they do the replays, they actually edit out the words retard and faggot. They edit out the N-word.
N-word, yeah.
And then Gilbert said, oh, Nick, and faggot and they'll never have me on now. And I was like.
He hasn't been on in years.
Yeah, well.
Banned, right?
He's not banned.
That's what you see in the media. That,
yeah, his.
You're banned, he's banned.
I'm banned, he's banned, Lisa Lampanelli's banned. And when the article came out, I got a kick out of it. I was like, holy shit, I'm in the New York Post.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, how cool is this? And I called Lisa, and Lisa got she reached out to them like, hey, what the fuck? She got the same conversation that I had with Gary, which is, you know, you're not banned, and it's not a no. It's just a no for now. We're just a different kind of show now. We don't let comedians hang out anymore.
Right.
We used to let comedians in. And Gary, I remember going out of his way to explain to me, like, the only reason we had Amy Schumer on is because she was promoting a movie. That's the only reason we brought Amy Schumer in. You know, but we don't let comedians on. But, you know.
I don't get her.
Yeah.
I'm not going to badmouth her. I'm not asking you to comment either way. But I don't get her. I met her when she was really young and she was doing stand-up at the Punchline.
Yeah.
I thought she was super funny. And I don't know what happened between when she was young and now. Because her jokes were good, but now it's just like, ah, pussy. So
yeah, she never, like, was on my radar as, like, somebody I like to watch, mm-hmm. you know? But it seems to be working, you know, and I'm not.
Oh, I know it's working.
You know,
anybody that makes people laugh,
judge.
I
yeah.
support. You know,
yeah.
I'm not one of these.
Which, by the way, the Punchline has one of the greatest entertainment business stories I've ever heard in my life. I'm getting a little sidetracked here, but I remember running into Colin Quinn in New York and telling him I was going to run into Larry the Cable Guy soon.
Mm-hmm.
And Colin said, you're going to see Larry? And I go, yeah. And he goes, can you do me a favor? He goes, can you please apologize to Larry the Cable Guy for me? 20 years ago, I was in Atlanta, Georgia at the Punchline. And this guy walks up to me and he says, hey, Colin, my name's Dan Whitney. I'm a comedian. Do you mind watching my set? And Colin said, yeah, sure. And so he watches a set, and he does a little bit of Larry the Cable Guy in the middle of his set. And Colin goes up to him and goes, you know, it's funny, but that Larry the Cable Guy thing, I don't know, like small doses. He goes, Craig, I almost cost him $1 billion. He said, it's the worst advice
right.
I've ever given in my life. I almost cost him $1 billion. Please apologize. I told Larry, and Larry thought it was the funniest story. But every time I think of the Punchline, mm-hmm. I think about that story. I think about that amazing, how crazy it is that one left turn or one right turn.
Yeah, in anybody's career.
And, you know, you never know. You never know what's going to happen. But to your point, yeah, there are people that, you know, if they're succeeding, it's like, hey, it's great for them. And it's comedy's never been bigger in terms of how many tickets it sells
mm-hmm.
overall. I saw Kevin Hart 2 summers ago. I never paid attention to Kevin when we were both in the clubs. But then he just kept getting bigger and bigger. And I was like, what is going
on?
He's
bigger than Eddie Murphy.
Yeah. I mean,
was,
I
you know.
Saw him 2 summers ago sell out an NFL stadium. Nobody had ever done that before. A friend of mine with the Philadelphia Eagles, who works in their administration, got me a ticket to go watch a show. And I watched him perform for the first time. I was like, wow, I get it.
It's a performance, right? It's a real energetic, fun.
Yeah. And very relatable. He's a good storyteller. And I just dug it. And I went to back to New York and told this story to all these comedians.
Right.
It's like, man, I just saw Kevin Hart sold 65,000 seats tonight. Like, what? And I go, yeah, in a stadium. I go, what do you mean a stadium? I go, where the fucking Eagles play.
Yeah.
Kevin Hart sold it out in the stadium where the Philadelphia Eagles play. And Gary Goldman was one of the comedians. He goes, wait a second. Kevin Hart's from Philly, right? And I go, yeah. And he goes, oh, so he's got family. And I go, he doesn't have 65,000. He's not like a, you know, Mormon or, you know, whatever. But, I mean, come on.
The largest crowd I've ever seen a comedy show with was I saw Sam Kinison at the Broome County Arena in Binghamton, New York.
Wow.
And I will never forget that show. It was a great show. I mean, it was 87, so, you know, he still had some years left in him. But, boy, to be able to say that I saw Sam Kinison, so many people now don't even know who he is or appreciate
it. That's crazy.
But he was just the biggest comedian. He was the hugest. And toward the end of the 80s, you had Dice.
Yeah.
And by the way, just as a sidetrack on my own, Dice put out one album that was a hit. And then he put out The Day the Laughter Died, which was that two CD
of
album.
Of him bombing.
Yeah. But that was brilliant. I mean, he put it out on purpose because he was bombing. But anyway, but back to the show. So you did a number of things for Howard's show. And that kind of projected you or propelled you to Family Guy and King of Queens and Sex in the City. And,
everything.
Yeah.
I mean,
I was reading. You say you don't have an agent. Is that true?
I don't have an agent, and I've been paying my mom's bills now for 17 years.
Nice.
And that is directly related to the Howard Stern Show. It changed everything. It shifted everything in my life. Sex in the City I got. I was on the Howard Stern Show talking about a relationship I'd just gotten out of, and I was heartbroken. And someone called Gary Delabate and said, hey, we do casting for Sex in the City. We want Craig to call us. And I called them and they said, we heard you talking about your relationship and we think you'd play a really good insecure guy on Sex in the City. And I was like, okay.
All right.
And then King of Queens was a guy who's a big Stern fan who was a writer for King of Queens who said, hey, man, I got an idea for you to be on King of Queens. And Las Vegas, where I ended up with Alec Baldwin and James Caan. Everything except Family Guy. Family Guy was discovered on YouTube.
Okay.
And the casting director, Linda, just called me up and said, hey, my name's Linda Lamontagne. I'm the casting director for Family Guy, American Dad, and at the time, The Cleveland Show. And I saw some videos of you. We want to offer you a job. And I said, sure. And she goes, are you available? And I go, I was sitting in a Long John Silver's when she called me.
Yeah,
and I was like, get some Hush Puppies. I was like, yeah, I'm available. What do you need? And she goes, can you – I know you're based out of New York. I live in L.A. now because of Family Guy. But she goes, I know you're based out of New York, but if you want to – we have a studio we can talk to you at in New York, and we can use an ISDN line. Or if you can be in L.A. by next Friday, we can have you in the studio with Seth MacFarlane. And I was like, I'll be in L.A. Yeah, I can go to L.A. And she goes, all right, can you be on this date at this time? And I said, yeah. I said yes to everything, hung up the phone. The day before I flew out, I was telling all my comedian buddies, like, dude, I got offered a gig with Family Guy. And all my friends were like, my God, how much are they paying you? And I went,
I
have no idea. I never even asked that question.
Right.
And then I had to call her up and go, Linda, hey, it's Craig Gass. Oh, man, I feel really bad. And she goes, are you okay? And I go, no, I'm totally fine. I'm flying there tomorrow morning. And this is very embarrassing, but I never asked you, how much am I getting paid for this? She goes, oh, I don't. Hold on. I hear going through some paperwork and she goes, Craig Gass. Craig, you're getting scale plus 10. And I said, okay. So I'm scale plus 10? She goes, yeah. And I go, okay. So I'm scale plus 10. She goes, you got any questions? And I go, yeah, what's scale plus 10?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm pretending to know what she's talking about. Mm-hmm. And then she had to explain to me that the union minimum that was negotiated was that the minimum pay for scale was $780 plus 10%, which was another $78. So I was going to get paid $858 to do
lucrative, right?
For me, it was like my plane ticket, I think, was $300
or
$400. And I was like, so I'll net $400. Like, I would have paid them.
The credit is worth it.
Yeah. And you know what? My first residual check, I think, was over $1,000.
Nice.
And that was for a quarter. That was for one quarter of a year. So
I did a 15-minute session for Adult Swim, three or four months ago. It was before I got married, so it was February. And I got paid a nice little penny for that, but it wasn't very long. And I love the fact that, you know, I'm not on IMDb. I don't care. I've only done one show on Adult Swim, and that's Squidbillies, and I always do Larry Munson. You know, he used to be the voice of the Georgia Bulldogs, and he always and because Squidbillies is set in Georgia, you know, the GPS or the one time I did him on TV, and Larry Munson is God. So I like to tell people, I got to work with Fred Armisen once because Fred Armisen is Jesus Squid and I was God Squid, but we weren't in the same room, of course.
Yeah, my first recording session was with Seth MacFarlane. There's been times when I've gone in there and I'm waiting, and then I don't pay attention to what's going on, and I realize, oh, shit. That guy.
Who's your biggest voice on this show?
Oh, on...
Family Guy. I mean, you've done everybody.
They had me do Al Pacino. That was my first one. I did Robert De Niro. I did Judd Nelson.
Judd Nelson?
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of...
For what? They couldn't... I guess he wasn't available?
You know what? It's been explained to me sometimes that what happens is they'll write something for a celebrity and they'll say, hey, we got this idea for you. And if the celebrity says, I'm not saying that about myself, they'll go, all right, Craig, you want to work on this? And they'll give me the thing. The Judd Nelson was American Dad. The main character in American Dad gets called in for jury duty, which he loves.
Stan.
I've only seen like one episode of the show. So he's excited. He's done jury duty a million times. He loves it. He loves it so much that when he goes in for the orientation, they say, okay, welcome to your first day of jury duty. Here is your orientation tape with Judd Nelson. Hi, I'm Judd Nelson, and I used to be famous now.
I remember that.
And everything he says, they pan over to the main character who is actually lip-syncing. He's seen the video so many times, he's lip-syncing to everything that Judd Nelson says. And it's me doing the voice of Judd Nelson. So, but there's been times when I've come in and they go, I'll come in to read for a celebrity, and they'll go, hey, while you're here, do you mind reading for the part of a gay guy that gets in a bar fight with Cleveland at a gay bar? And I'll be like, I'll be as gay as you want, whatever you need. And they'll go, all right, let's try this line and just yell it out. And they'll throw me like random voices, which is awesome. My first episode was with Seth MacFarlane, and I haven't seen him since because I came off so strong. I was so excited to work with Seth. I come in, the whole recording session lasted maybe, it was less than 10 minutes. Seth MacFarlane just kept doing this one line as Peter Griffin where he kept saying, this is crazier than when Al Pacino was a slumlord laundromat tenant. And they cut to me as Al Pacino, surrounded by a bunch of broken down washers and dryers going, you're out of order. And you're out of order. And you're all out of order. And I did that three times. And Seth is running the board. And he goes, all right, man.
Later.
Thanks. I think we're good. And I'm nervous because I have it in my mind that Seth and I are going to be friends now.
Right.
Because we're working together. So I stay there. And I go, hey, so you want to hang out at all? He goes, he look around like, what do you mean hang out? I go, I don't know. You want to grab a coffee or something? He goes, I got to work. And I go, all right, do you want me to leave? And he goes, yeah, get the fuck out of here. And I go, oh, I'm sorry. I grab my papers and I walk out. And I'm like, oh, shit. And then I start thinking later, like, why did I do that? Why did I do that? And
you're
then,
excited.
And I didn't hear from them for months. Mm-hmm. And then Linda started calling me again and saying, hey, Craig, can you do this voice? And I'm like, yeah, 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 absolutely, absolutely. And then I'd start recording. And then she'd pass me on to say, all right, you're going to do this one. And every time I go in, Seth is never – I haven't seen him since. Every time I come in, it's usually this guy, Mike Henry, who does the voice of Cleveland and the creepy old guy. And every time I see Mike, I'll go, hey, Mike, is Seth around? And every time I see him, he goes, don't worry about Seth. We'll get you out of here real quick. Come on.
Oh, wow.
We'll get you out of here really quick.
You know there's a porn star that looks just like him.
That looks like who?
Seth MacFarlane.
Really?
Dylan Harper.
Wow.
There's a big meme going around. I don't know if you
really?
Follow. Yeah. So whenever you see her posted somewhere, it's like, oh, look at Seth MacFarlane.
Really?
Yeah.
So look up Dylan Harper.
Hang on one second. I got to go pee.
So do I.
Let's go pee. All right. We're back from our piss break.
Hey, everybody. We just peed together.
By the way, I'm talking to Craig Gass, if you didn't know that. You can find him at GetGass with two S's, GetGass.com, or at Craig Gass Comedy on the Twitter.
And Tracy Morgan.
And Tracy Morgan. Now this is a podcast, so it's going to live out there forever. But if you're listening to it before this weekend, which will be the last weekend in June,
yeah,
you can see Tracy. You're going to go see him at the Punchline. For tickets and more, go to punchline.com.
I'm going to the Punchline. I'm going to go watch Craig Gass out there. I ain't going to be in the show, but I'll be out in the parking lot making pornos and handing out Walmart gift cards.
Why don't you I wonder how many of those he got.
Come find me in the parking lot. I'll be out there in a white handy van making pornos.
Can you give me one or two?
Yeah.
I want to be in the porno as long as it's not gay porn.
Anything you need from Walmart, I'll take care of. You need Pampers, anything. I'll take care of you, Walmart.
I don't need Pampers. What's the one impression you've been trying to do but can't get?
There's some that I like as being bad. I think it's fun.
Right.
You know, some it'll start sometimes where I'll go, I'll try to like start to get to a voice, and then friends will go, oh, that doesn't sound like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I'll get really defensive and I'll go, dude, it's.
I get the same way.
It's Arnold Schwarzenegger after a bad car accident.
Right, right,
you're
right.
Not listening. And that way I can get away with, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
It's
I can't
Arnold
do
Schwarzenegger.
It.
It's, that's Arnold Schwarzenegger after a bad car accident.
I get it.
Listen.
Right.
So along those lines, like I started to do a Mark Wahlberg and then I said, you know what, fuck it. I'm just going to stop halfway there and I'm just going to call it out of breath Mark Wahlberg. So I can just get away with, guys, are you serious? You better watch out. I'm going to tell you right now. Come on, feel it, feel it. Feel the vibration. You know?
Yeah. Oh, going like, back. You're going back there. I mostly, like I told you earlier, is just mimicking. So we have audio that we'll play. We do a political show mostly. And I make fun of Trump. I do Trump. My boss here at WSB, he likes my Caitlyn Jenner.
Well, how's your Caitlyn Jenner?
All right, let me see. I always have to start it with, you know, Diane, when I decided to go ahead and make this transition, I thought, whoa, what's my family going to think? So, you know, it's just I decided for me and myself that I was the number one decathlon person in the mid-70s. I got to tell you that there was a lady in there named Caitlin, and she was pushing for me.
That is a great impression. I can't look at you when you do it. I just want to hear it. And I did like a half-assed one in the middle of a premise for this TV thing that I filmed, where it's like all these people doing it was hosted by Dana Carvey and Steve Carell.
First impressions. When's that coming back, by the way?
I don't know if they're doing it, if they're bringing it back for a second season or not. But I did a whole premise of, I think it was like Morgan Freeman saying,
they say that in Hollywood, the one place that you can find a real celebrity is at your local AA meeting.
And then there's a scene that opens up. Hey, all right, so my name's Tom Arnold, and we're going to go around the room and just give me your first name and what your addiction is. And you don't have to give any last names. We're going to be anonymous. And hi, my name's Charlie. I've got AIDS, yeah, and then there was one voice that I did that was, my name's Caitlin, and I don't identify with this group, and that was the line.
Yeah,
it was a cheesy little.
I enjoyed that show.
Yeah, it was a cool show, man. For me, I wanted to do it just to make friends with Dana Carvey. Mm-hmm. I adore him. He's a really unbelievably likable guy. And I just wanted to make friends with them. And our first, I did an audition. They auditioned like 150 people from around the country came out to this comedy club out in Burbank. Mm-hmm. And then we all just came up and they spent like 6 hours going through everybody doing impressions. And then the top five people from that group got to film that night, to film what would be a sizzle reel to try to sell the show. And I made it in the top five. And then I ended up winning there was like a grand prize mm-hmm. of, I think it was like $1,000, and you get to perform with Dana Carvey. Or Dana decided at the last minute, hey, I'm going to also give you the gig, and he gave it to me. And
one thing I didn't like about that show was the editing. It looked to me like that show could have been an hour long,
yeah,
and there was probably a shitload of comedy that they had to cut out.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it seems that most of the contestants they had on had a couple of good impressions without a lot of strong material.
Okay, that might be why. Yeah, I
see that. So they had to cut down a lot. And that was evident in the audition, in the big cattle call, when they had the 150 people come in from around the country. There was a lot of guys who did Bill Cosby, but they were all doing the same, I just want to rape you.
I can't do Bill Cosby, so yeah. On the Von Hessler Doctrine, our Autumn does.
Yeah.
The girl.
I had a, this is, again, it's unrelated really, but it's kind of related. A friend of mine the day before the election, a musician friend, he's actually in a really famous heavy metal band, was campaigning for people to vote for Donald Trump. And he listed all these reasons why, you know, he believed that Donald Trump should be president. And then the last reason was, on a personal note, I met Donald Trump once, and I can tell you from personal experience, He's a really nice guy. And I desperately wanted to comment and go, you know what? I met Bill Cosby once, and he was really nice to me, but that dude's a fucking rapist. I mean, he's, come on. I mean, the guy's a fucking rapist. I mean, you know, I
right.
it was really tough for me to, but yeah, I love hearing a good impression. I love doing impressions. It's all fun for me, and the fact that I've been able to do it and make a living, it's crazy to me.
I think I stole your Paul Stanley.
Yeah? How does your Paul Stanley sound?
I make him real effeminate. I'm just like, you know, it's the 70s. Listen, I make him sound like a stupid, effeminate guy. That's how I do Paul Stanley. Now, I don't even know if it sounds like him because I can't do the screaming and all that stuff.
My Paul Stanley used to be on point, and then I kind of lost it. And Paul will point it out when I go do shows with them. I remember once just going to a concert, they let me go. They like, if I make a phone call, they will go, all right, we'll give you backstage passes and we'll get you into the concert. And I get like all access. It's crazy. And I'll bring comedians with me and we'll just hang out. And then I remember standing in the hallway and the band has their boots and their makeup on. They look like monsters and they start walking towards the stage. And I'm just standing in the hallway and Paul walked past me and I went, hey, Paul, like just, hey, buddy, you know. And he kept walking and then he stopped and he looked and he went, you need to work on your impression of me.
See, that sounds just like him.
You make me sound really lispy. And I go, oh, all right, sorry.
See, I use my upper teeth and I just make it all lispy. See, it doesn't sound like him so much. But, you know, I downplay him. Now, you do kick ass, Gene. So can I get a little Gene, please?
Well, Gene was a friend of mine who works with Aerosmith. His name's John Bianelli, is the guy who taught me how to do the Gene Simmons impression. And he actually said, if you listen to Benjamin Netanyahu, it's the same voice. And
because whether you're in the band Kiss or if you're Benjamin Netanyahu, everybody talks like this, okay?
And every time John and I called each other for years, that's how we spoke to each other. Is he'd pick up the phone, hello?
Hi, John, this is Gene Simmons. From Kiss. and he'll go,
hey, what's going on, Gene?
Not much. Listen, I hope you don't mind, but Aerosmith's entire catalog is available now for $29.95 at kissonline.com.
And he'll go, oh, that's great. And that's how we talked to each other. Well, 15 years ago, was it 10? Yeah, between 10 and 15 years ago, Kiss and Aerosmith put a tour together. And John is in the office at Aerosmith's management company, Vindaloo Music. The phone rings. He picks it up. And he hears,
hi, John, this is Gene Simmons from Kiss.
And John goes, what's up, you cheap Jew bastard? And then there's a long pause, and you hear,
I'm sorry.
And there's another long pause, and he goes, Craig? And he hears,
no, it's not Craig Gass. It's Gene Simmons from Kiss. Listen, I need to get a hold of Steven and Joe. I want to ask them. And he went right into his question.
Didn't take offense to it. He just went right into his thing, which blew my mind.
Does he have to say from Kiss? Because in the 50s, there was a woman named Gene Simmons.
You know what? So I started doing this impression on the Howard Stern Show where I thought it would be funny if every time we had a music guest in the studio, I would interrupt the music guest as Gene Simmons and try to sell them shitty Kiss products that I made up in my head.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Jay-Z, but there's an incredible thing that I need to announce. I don't know if you're aware, but there is now at kissonline.com the new Kiss toilet. Now, you might be asking yourself, what's the difference between a regular toilet and a Kiss toilet? Well, the Kiss toilet is a pay toilet. It costs 25 cents to do your business, and then as you flush, you hear your favorite Kiss song, whatever.
And and so that's how that impression developed. And then I found out much later that apparently the real Gene Simmons started getting hate mail from people that thought that he really was on the Howard Stern Show saying awful things to people. So he flew out to New York to confront me live on the air. After he confronted me that night, I was headlining Caroline's for the first time, which is a really big deal for a comedian.
Hell yeah.
Caroline's is a big benchmark. And I got him. I still have the message. This is really creepy, but I've saved all the voicemail messages I've gotten from people I admire.
That's not crazy.
George Carlin. I've got like 20 voicemail messages from George Carlin that I saved. Gene Simmons, Lars Ulrich. Like, hey, man, I caught that fucking joke that you did. The fucking, what's that Gilbert Godfrey joke with the fucking cunts and the whatever it is? It's poetry. The whole thing's poetry. And so Gene Simmons leaves me a message. Boop.
Hi, Craig. This is Gene Simmons. From Kiss.
He actually said, from Kiss on my answering machine. Like, I'm going to confuse Gene Simmons from Kiss with Gene Simmons from Pep Boys or right. something. And
hi, this is Gene Simmons from Pep Boys.
And
your car's ready.
Listen, I know that you're headlining Caroline's tonight. I know this is a big deal for stand-up comedy, and that's why I want you to know the Kiss Army is behind you. And I support you. That's why I'm going to be in the front row.
Mm.
And Gene Simmons showed up. Well, with a bunch of women and sat in the front row, and I talked about Kiss for like 20 minutes at night, and Gene was just sitting in the front row with his arms folded going,
you know that's me he's talking about.
He was totally into it.
Right.
He sent a girl into my dressing room. It was Jade Barrymore, Drew Barrymore's mom, and she said, Gene wants to invite you out tonight. He wants to take you to a strip club. And I was like, oh. And I had a couple friends of mine with me who were huge Kiss fans, and I said, can I bring my friends? And any friend of yours is a friend of Gene's. So we go to a strip club with Gene, and we walked in, and it was crazy to see Fame and women reacted mm-hmm. to Fame, because he's an older guy, looks like an older guy, but he has a magic. And in fact, as soon as we walked in, they stopped the music and started playing Dr. Love by
nice.
Kiss. I mean, it was like, uh-oh, celebrities here. Let's change everything in the room. And then all these women started coming over and piling on top of Gene. And I was sitting on the same couch, just like as a fan, like,
right.
yay, go have sex. Like, and he saw me looking pathetic. He had a girl on his lap, and he's looking at me, and he goes, I got, like, he's going to tag me in. He goes to the stripper.
Let me ask you a question. Do you listen to Howard Stern? You do. Great. Because this gentleman right here, this powerful and attractive man, is the gentleman who does the impression of me. Isn't that something? And then the stripper looked at me and I went, what's going on? And she went, nothing. And I went, that's about right.
Oh,
that's
God.
That's about right. But I have to tell you, you'll get such a huge kick out of this. I performed with Kiss on the Kiss Cruise. I got invited to perform on the Kiss Cruise, and I ended up upsetting all the Kiss fans. And you're going to love this story.
All right, why?
I went and I met a girl on the cruise who is she's the cruise director. She's really upbeat, very peppy. She's the Julie McCoy of the Kiss Cruise.
She and, did coke?
No, she was actually really like just bubbly and
okay.
Just,
Lauren Tews did coke. So.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's yeah. right. Oh man, it went right over my head. That's why I feel like I'm not a real comedian. Shit goes right over my head. But she was really upbeat, and when she found out who I was, she's like, "Oh my God, you're the comedian. You're the guy who does voices on Family Guy." But do you want to do a funny announcement on the ship tomorrow morning? And I was like, "Oh, fuck yes." Is everybody going to hear it? And she goes, "Yeah, it gets piped into every cabin." So the next morning, everyone on the Kiss Cruise wakes up to.
Hey, everybody, this is Paul Stanley. And this is Gene Simmons from Kiss. And we have a very important announcement about the Kiss Cruise. Do not panic, but we have a very important announcement. It seems that the Kiss Cruise has just hit an iceberg,
which, keep in mind, we're in the middle of the fucking Bahamas when I said that, when I said we just hit an iceberg. There's no reason for you as an intelligent person to go, the ship's going down. We're in the middle of the Bahamas.
But do not panic, because Kiss is going to take care of everybody, okay? We actually have three packages to get you off the ship. First, we have the Platinum Package, which is $5,000, where we put you in a life raft and you have your own private photo taken with Kiss. Then we have the Diamond Package. Isn't that right, Paul?
That's right. The Diamond Package.
For $10,000, where we throw you in the ocean with Tommy and Eric, and then Kiss floats by on a raft, and we do a private acoustic show in the ocean.
Everything I said was stupid, but apparently two or three of the passengers actually got upset and ran to the employees and said, is Kiss really going to charge us to get off this boat? And that caused a little bit of a rift between me and the—
How dumb do you have to be to believe
and
that?
And some of the Kiss fans. Well, yeah. But it made for a great story, and And then they seem to be cool with it because Paul Stanley hired me like a little over a year and a half later.
Will you pose for one of my paintings?
By the way, there's two Paul Stanleys. You get the Paul Stanley in interviews where,
you know, he's really confident.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing a Rock Against Drugs commercial where he said, if you're a girl and you have an opportunity to be with me, why would you want to let drugs or alcohol take away such a bombastic moment that I'm about to give you?
Is that in the 80s or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He actually said bombastic.
Bombastic.
And I was like, fuck, that's cool, man.
You ever see this? The best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup.
Yeah! And then there's on stage Paul Stanley, where I saw him say in Las Vegas, all right, people, now listen. You know, I know that this town, Las Vegas, is known for its buffets. And I can tell you right now that after this show, I see a lot of people in the front row that I really want to eat. And then he started fixing his hair.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I remember saying that to people who worked for the band. A few weeks later, I saw them again at Madison Square Garden. I go, hey, did you hear Paul Stanley, his rap that he did that night in Vegas about wanting to eat the people in the front row? And three separate people said, did you hear about Nebraska?
What happened?
I go, no. And three different guys said that on stage in Nebraska, he said, all right, people, now listen. You know, I know that this state is known for its Angus beef. And I can tell you right now that after this show, I'm going to want to sink my teeth into some meat. And the whole crowd went, what?
What the fuck?
And then he came back to the mic and went, now hold on. You know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a thigh or a rump roast. And the whole crowd went, what? And he kept like backtracking.
So he's getting older and older and has to relate to people.
Yeah.
I want to go to a buffet.
Yeah. And apparently the whole backline guys, all the guys tuning the guitars are behind the stage going, what the fuck's he doing out there? Like, yeah. It's comedy, man. And thank God they have a good sense of humor.
My wife keeps texting me, when are you coming home? I have to sand down sheetrock mud tonight.
Oh, fun.
Mm-hmm. Or so drywall mud. Sorry.
Wow. How do you like being married?
I like being married. It's interesting.
Yeah.
At 46 years old, I finally got married.
First time being married?
Yeah.
At 46. Wow. Yeah. I've never been married. I've been in some long-term relationships, never been married, and I've had the fear. Did you have a fear? Is that what held you back?
I just like being lazy. I'm a man child. I like my ideal place, and I don't have this, but would be to have, you know, CDs and records and books on the wall, a lot of different clutter everywhere for my brain to, because my brain needs clutter. I can't look at orderly things.
Yeah, same here.
I'm not linear at all.
Are you messy?
Yeah, but not anymore. I mean, I have to clean up after myself, because but I'm messy, yeah. Speaking of my wife, she texted me yesterday morning. It was funny. She's on Fox 5.
So oh, yeah,
she's on Good Day Atlanta.
Yeah.
Usually she's a reporter, but she's filling in right now. She texts me. She goes, the guy that's going to be at the Punchline was really funny. I'd like to go see him.
How cool is that?
And I texted back, you mean Craig Gass? And she said, yeah. And so I texted you immediately, and then I sent her a screen grab of that I texted you. And she goes, so last night we're talking. She goes, how do you know him, or how long have you known him, or blah, blah, blah. And I said, I've known him for a long time.
We used to do coke together.
Yeah, we went on a lot of coke binges. We spent time at the Atlanta Eagle in the basement getting fucked. In the ass. No, I said, I've known her for a long time. She goes, well, aren't you a big deal? Are we going or not? She's not impressed with celebrity and stuff. So.
Wow.
But she thought you were very, very funny. And so she's not, hey, let's go see live comedy. The last time we saw live comedy together was Norm Macdonald at the Improv, which is now gone. She wasn't interested. I took her to see Marilyn Ricekeb.
Yeah.
And she loved that for some reason. So there you go.
Yeah, Marilyn, I've seen Marilyn kill at the Comedy Store.
She's very funny.
Wow.
But I am so, when she said, I'd like to go see this comedian, she forgot your name. And then I told her, and I go, well, I'll call Jamie right now and we're going to go. So we're going to go Saturday night.
That's awesome. It's so crazy to me. It's always surreal to me that anyone knows, is excited to see me, or like, I love comedy so much. I love, I can't believe, I'm still cognizant. I've been making a living doing this 17 years now. Every time I pay for a meal, I'm fully aware of like, this is comedy money. Like, I can't believe it. Or like, the greatest gift is being able to take friends out for a nice meal. I love being able to do that. I can't believe I'm doing that from stand-up comedy. And
how about when you're in a bad mood and or something's really pissing you off, and then you think, I made 350 people laugh last night.
I'm never really in a bad mood.
Good. I get. I always am.
I get grumpy if I'm tired, but yeah. I'm never really in a bad mood. But I am embarrassing. I know I have friends who are really successful, who are super famous, who go out of their way to not be bothered by mm-hmm. people. I am so embarrassing that if you recognize me and go, hey, I just want to tell you I loved you on whatever, I will talk to you until you get to the point where you go, okay, we have to leave. And I'll go, well, come on, let's fucking hang out. Like,
I made Meadowlark Lemon go, all right, enough.
Are you serious?
I was a little kid. I was 10 years old. And it wasn't the Harlem Globetrotters. It was the thing he formed after he left the Harlem Globetrotters.
Which is what?
I don't remember. It was some other bad. It was like the Harlem Globetrotters.
Really? I didn't even know he tried to do that.
And he's playing, and I'm down on the court.
Yeah.
Because my friend's dad was head of the athletic department, and we got in and we got to meet them all. And I'm like, I loved you on Hello, Larry. Do you remember that show?
I feel like I know
that.
It
was McLean Stevenson. It was a spinoff of Different Strokes. He was okay. Best friends with Mr. Drummond, and he lived in Maine, and he was a radio host.
Okay.
And he had two daughters, whatever.
And Meadowlark?
Meadowlark Lemon is a guest on his radio show. Said, I loved you on this. I loved you on Scooby-Doo. And he's like, all right, kid.
Wow.
But that's really? How I always, I mean, I always, if I see someone, my first reaction is, I love you in this, not, oh, hey, you know, I'll leave you alone. But, you know, I want to tell people, you yeah. made me laugh, or you made me cry, or you made me think.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. And I always think of like, what would I, how do I like approach this person?
Yeah.
Like, what is the way to have a conversation with this person? And it's funny because I feel like, in radio, I've been working in radio for 23 years, mm-hmm. or 24 years, as long as I've been doing comedy. And in radio, you get to meet everybody. You get to meet people on the way up and on the way down. And it's weird that I can be around the most famous person in the world right now. This is the number one most famous person in the world. And I'll be sitting next to them and go, oh, okay, that's the – all right, this is the famous guy. All
mm-hmm.
right. But if I run into somebody that I grew up watching, I'll just lose my shit.
Right.
I saw Henry Winkler in at JFK Airport.
Oh, he's such a nice man.
And I almost cried.
He's very nice. Oh, let me sign that for you. I normally charge 20, but you 10.
He, a buddy of mine who does radio in Kansas City, had Henry call into a show.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just, I came in a week later, and my buddy said, oh, man, did you hear about what happened with me and Henry Winkler? And I go, no, and he played me audio. And apparently it was like a running joke on his morning show every day where he was playing the audio that Henry Winkler's on the phone. My friend Johnny is so excited to be talking to him. And then and Johnny is trying to figure out a way to get to, you know, hang out with him. Like, Henry, if you need anything, you know, if you, you know, please look me up. You know, I'll dial you in to anything you need. And he goes, oh, you know what, Henry? Or not Henry, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what, Johnny? Where is a good place to eat? And he said, and he goes, because you know what would be great? I would like to take my friend somewhere. And there was some line where it was ambiguous enough that Johnny went, oh, and then Henry said, because I want to go with my friends. And then you hear, oh. And he replayed that 5 seconds over and over again to mock himself going, oh. And then he just beat himself up over it. And a week later, he got a call from a block number. He didn't pick it up. And he got a voicemail. Johnny, this is Henry Winkler. I feel terrible. I didn't understand that you wanted to be friends with me. And the next time I come to Kansas City, you and I are going to hang out. And I was like, oh, my God, you got a call from Henry. I couldn't believe it. And 2 weeks after that, I see Henry Winkler in the JFK. And it was 5 o'clock in the morning. And I said, Henry, my name's Craig Gass. I'm a stand-up comedian. I'm really good friends with Johnny Dare. And he goes, oh, poor Johnny.
What a nice dude.
Yeah. And everywhere I watched him, like a stalker, everywhere he went, people were tapping each other on the shoulder and just smiling and pointing at him. It's Henry Winkler.
Yeah, oh my God.
Yeah, it's the Fonz. It's.
I used to prank people as Tom Bosley.
That was Tom Bosley.
and I did the old doddering Tom Bosley before he died. I was on Happy Days and the Father Dowling Mysteries. And Chuck, Chuck was Richie's older brother. And then
two actors played Chuck, and then I did this bit where I go, and Donnie Most found Chuck swinging from the beam. He had hung himself in Richie's apartment.
And we would prank, a lot of times it was Jenner's from, when Jenner's and I were on 99X, Rob Jenner's, we would prank interns and say, you have to do an interview to pass the internship with a celebrity. And there's always these flights coming in from these different satellite companies doing satellite tours. And it was to promote Happy Days season 2. And I just berated the girls because they'd done all the research. I'm like, I don't want to talk about that. And they'd say, what do you think about Erin Moran? This was long before she passed away. And I go, she had a pill problem. She had a drug problem. And I don't keep in touch with Henry Winkler. We had a falling out.
Oh, that is awesome. That is awesome. What a great way to fuck with people.
Well, I am going to go see you this Saturday night, Craig. I think it's a 9 o'clock show with my lovely wife. You were at the Punchline all weekend long. Go to punchline.com.
Seven shows, man.
Seven shows.
A show on Thursday.
You remember that I bugged Jamie Bendel to get Craig Gass there. I hope you remember that.
It was
I'm
really,
sure a lot of people did, but
I've been trying to get in that club forever, and the fact that Shaquille O'Neal wanted me to do this thing and it happened to be going on the Punchline, I was like, oh, it's gonna be awesome. And I guess, you know, several people, including the owners, mm-hmm. were telling Jamie, you need to talk to that guy. And Jamie was like, all right, let's
the owner of the club?
I guess are there owners?
There's
that are
multiple. He's part of owner and okay. Then, I believe Billy Gardell's manager.
Wow,
is part owner.
I didn't know that.
Chris DePetta.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah, Billy will be here in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Do you like him? I think he's a nice guy.
He was really nice. He showed up at an open mic that I went to in Orlando once.
Yeah.
A few years ago, he was mid swing of that TV show, and he showed up at an open mic a few days before Christmas, I believe it was, and I was like, wow, that's pretty cool, man.
He was always a good guest on the radio. You were always a great guest on the Regular Guy show. I always wanted you all week.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, only one or two days. I'm like, every day, what's laugh?
Yeah. Yeah, and I always found it like I always love coming to Atlanta because of that. I love coming in, and I like not only sitting in as a guest, I like sitting in as other people for a week.
Yeah.
And just saying, man, you know, what do you think, Tom Arnold? I think it's great. You know what? I don't know. I just want to mention, I had a really good night. I was at a Cocaine Anonymous meeting last night with Dominique. I probably shouldn't say this out loud, but he's got a big drug problem. And Bob Costas is his sponsor. Bob's addicted to kiddie porn. And, you know, and I just start, like, just saying the most random shit as celebrities. And people going, what? Like, I love... Exactly what you describe with Tom Bosley mm-hmm. fucking with an intern, that is such a thrill for me. I did that. I know we're like wrapping this up, but I got to tell you quickly. I did a show about a year ago in Toronto. I had a really nice theater called the Panasonic Theater. I was doing two shows. I was selling a lot of tickets in Toronto. And I wanted – I know that Rush is based out of Toronto. I wanted their manager to come out to my show. I wasn't scheming – I wasn't going to use the manager to get to the band. I really thought their manager would appreciate what I was doing on my stand-up. Name of the company is SRO Entertainment is their management company. And I'm trying to think of the guy's name that is their manager. Rush's manager. Fuck, it's right on the tip of my tongue. You can try to Google it. Rush's manager, SRO Management. And he's been with them since day one, over 40 years of managing Rush. And
Ray Daniels?
Ray Daniels, that's right. Ray Daniels with two N's, I believe. So I called SRO Management. Someone got me the number. And then I realized, shit, like nobody knows me. Like, why am I, hi, I'm Craig Guess. I do voices on Family Guy, and I'm doing it. And I thought, you know, all they'll do is take a message. And I thought, but if I call them as somebody else... So they pick up the phone. Hello, SRO Management.
Hi, this is Gene Simmons from KISS. I need to speak with Ray Daniels, please.
And they said, oh, hold one moment. Mm-hmm. Put me right through. Hi, Ray Daniels' office.
Hi, this is Gene Simmons from KISS. I need to speak with Ray Daniels, please.
Oh, Gene, Ray's actually out of town today, but if you want to give me your phone number, I'll have him call you back tomorrow when he gets back in. And I said...
All right, how about you give me his phone number?
And she went, okay, I just want to make sure that it's really you. And I said,
okay, then ask me a question.
And she went, what?
You want to know if it's me, ask me a question.
And she went,
I'll tell you what, I'll ask you a question.
who's the greatest rock band of all time? And she went,
I'm guessing it's Kiss.
That's right.
And she went, all right, it's 416. And she gave me the number, and I called this guy up. I get his voicemail. Ray, hey, oh, man, I hope you have a good sense of humor. My name's Craig Gass. I'm a stand-up guy. I'm performing at the Panasonic Theater. I just prank called your assistant, and she gave me your cell phone number, which I really hope that you're able to laugh about this. But I'd love to invite you to the show. I never heard from him. Never heard from his assistant. I don't even know if she's still working for him.
Probably got fired.
Yeah, she might have. So, but yeah, that was, you know, it's fun for me, man. You know, life goes by so fucking quickly.
It does.
And you just have to try to enjoy it. So I'm excited.
I'm going to use you as inspiration because you told me that you don't get angry and mad. I think I need to live that way.
Well, I just think that negativity is really useless. And I don't know where that came from. I just always have been naturally repelled by it. I know that negativity is contagious.
It's toxic.
It's sweeping the country right now.
Believe me, I'm very, very aware of all of it, okay? Before we go, I'll tell you real quick. Well, I used to have Jesse Jackson's cell phone number.
No shit!
So one day I was home and I was stoned, okay? I'm by myself, stoned. I wasn't even recording it.
Shit.
So I took my phone, and this was shortly after the nappy-headed hose thing.
Yeah.
And I called up, and the phone rang, and I heard, hello, Jesse? Is this Jesse Jackson?
Oh, shut the fuck up.
And he said, yes. I went, Jesse, this is Don Imus.
Great impression.
I said, listen, I got your number here, and I just wanted to apologize. And I should have said what I said. And, you know, I feel terrible. I feel awful about this, and I just wanted to talk to you directly. And he's like, oh, okay, thank you, I'm in. And I went, yeah, if you could come on my show. And he's like, well, I'll work it out. I'm like, yeah, okay, just give my producer a call or And I started getting nervous because he was believing
it. Everything. You're not recording this?
No.
I've done shit like that.
And then I tried to get him again, and he didn't answer the phone. Yeah. I had it set up because I called Larry, you know, from the regular guys. I said, I just pranked Jesse Jackson. It was so funny. He goes, did you record it? And I said, no. No. But, you know, here we are 5 minutes past the hour.
I did that like 20-something years ago to Tom Arnold.
Who did you do?
I just started doing comedy. Excuse me. And a friend of mine said, hey, man, you know all those celebrities that are in town for the grand opening of Planet Hollywood are all staying at the hotel I work at the Hilton or Sheraton downtown? And I said, really? And he goes, and I said, well, what celebrities? And one of them was Tom Arnold. And so I called up the hotel, and I said, hi, Tom Arnold, please. And they went, please hold. And the phone started ringing. And I was just in my apartment, and I hear, hello. And I went, I go, Tom, it's Sam Kinison. And he goes, hey, what's up, buddy? Sam had been dead for like 8 years. And he goes, hey, buddy, what's going on? I go, Tom, I know this might freak you out. I'm calling you from the afterlife, and I need some help. And he goes, what do you need me to do, Sam? And he just goes along with it. And I go, so listen, here's what I need. I need you to help me get some cocaine, okay? I need you to get me some cocaine to the afterlife. And first of all, I need you to front me the cash. I need you to front me the cash because I don't have any cash on me. And I'll pay you back. But what I want you to do is I want you to buy a significant amount of cocaine. And then I need you to go to Los Angeles. And I need you to take the cocaine and put it in the pocket of Jerry Lewis. And I'll have it when he gets here in 3 weeks. Oh, oh, oh. And then I finally just stopped and said, hey, Tom, I'm sorry. My name's Craig Gass. I'm a stand-up comedian. He went, oh, man, that was really good, man. That, you know, like it's so, like, I want to call my sponsor. That's how good it is. And I said, Tom, do you want to go to an open mic tonight with me? I invited him to an open mic, and he goes, you know what? I got some stuff I got to do related to the Planet Hollywood thing, but is there a tape? Can you swing by the hotel and drop off some of your comedy? I'll check it out. And I was like, sure. And I dropped off a tape. I think it was the same tape I gave Gary DeLabate. And Tom called me a week later and said, hey, man, here's all my contact information, and you're very talented.
That's freaking awesome.
And then what happens? I start doing a Tom Arnold impression, which like ruins him, you know,
because right.
Every year at the Super Bowl, and I'll do it here.
in 2019.
Okay.
I will broadcast from the Super Bowl Media Center doing local radio as a bunch of different celebrities, including Tom Arnold, saying, man, I love being in Atlanta. It's really cool. I was actually at a Narcotics Anonymous meeting with Chipper Jones. I probably shouldn't say this out loud, but Chipper is addicted to Demerol, and his sponsor is actually Ted Turner. He's addicted to hair plugs. And again, I shouldn't say that out loud, but I'll just start like outing, you know, quote unquote. And then people once a year will tweet Tom Arnold and go, hey, man, it's supposed to be anonymous, dude. That's not fucking cool. And then he'll start fighting with everybody. Hey, did you notice that fucking Sam Kinison was broadcasting from there and he's been dead for 20 years, you idiot? And he'll fight people. And, you know, I feel bad for it. But the impression is so much
funny. And it's fun to do.
All right, we're going way too far. I'm sorry, man. I keep pushing.
No.
This is like every night.
You don't think that I'm sitting here like being like you and like, I fucking love this.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to be that way.
Every night in my life is like this, where I want a fun night to just go on forever.
Right.
You know? And I always like overstay my welcome. So.
No. You're not. You're welcome here as long as you want. I'm just starting now to think about it. I gotta go home and sand the rest of that sheetrock. And then I got to put the ceiling fan in. And then my wife's going to go to bed because she's got to go view the news. No, man. This has been fucking amazing to me. I'm a huge fan. You're a hero.
You've always been so nice to me, and I really appreciate you for that.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because you're nice. But the other thing is that I respect that. I mean, you're just... Your voices are freaking amazing. I've always been into comedians who can do the voices.
Yeah.
And just, I love it. It's just, and I don't know where it comes from. There's not very many of us who can do voices.
Yeah.
And I'm including myself in that because I don't.
For sure.
Well, I always put, oh, you suck. You're not good at it. Fuck that. I got tired of doing all that. And I'm in a happy place now. And I just, it makes me happy that I have a job where I can go, hey, you're one of my favorite comedians and impressionists in the entire country. Will you come talk to me for an hour?
Yeah.
And the other hosts of the show are sad that they couldn't be here. And Stephanie is our co-host, and she wanted to hear some Christopher Walken, if you wouldn't mind.
Here's a great – actually, you know what? Can I tell you a great Christopher Walken story?
Please do.
Kamal from the Jerky Boys told me an amazing story about
– D! Shut the fuck up! Shut the fuck up! Little elf. I need you to come clean my apartment right now!
Egyptian magician.
Get off my drums.
Who is on your drums?
I don't know. They call him Crazy Fingers. I have all those calls memorized.
Yeah, he...
Do you ever meet Johnny Brennan? And then you tell your Christopher Walken story.
No, man.
Because he's on Family Guy.
He's on Family Guy, and I've never seen him over there, but Kamal and Johnny Brennan... Kamal will tell any stranger.
Yeah.
Strangers.
Right.
How much he hates Johnny Brennan. It's a bummer.
I don't know why they don't like each other. Brennan will start a project, by the way. Get into it for about a month or two, and then disappear.
Really?
He was doing a podcast, and he was, you know, doing the calls and stuff.
Really?
And then he stopped doing it. It was great.
No, it's so... Joel Rosenberg.
Yeah.
Oh, I was hurt at work today.
Well, that's a very sophisticated kind of case. May I suggest you come in?
Should I bring my shoes?
They beat me across the face, chest, and breast.
Yeah.
They won't. Wait, I don't want to be tied up to motorboats and dragged around like a fool. He told me I could come down there and we could go parasailing.
Well, I'm his mother, and that doesn't sound like Jim to me.
That's right. Yeah. One of the best.
Yes.
Oh my
or the
God.
Juggy Gales. Juggy. What? Yeah, the Huckabuck. He was giving me the hug. You know, Frank checked out, owed me a lot of money. He called the guy who wrote this, you know, the guy from the Brill Building.
Who was the super arrogant, cocky voice? The fucking powerful. Hey,
Frank Rizzo.
Frank Rizzo.
R-I-Z-Z-O.
Yeah. Open your ears, jackass. Yeah. Well, so Kamal. I meet at a fucking Deep Purple concert. I think it was at a backstage at a Deep Purple concert at the Brendan Byrne Arena, and we stay in touch. And actually, Kamal is friends with me, and he's friends with Artie. And I start going on the Stern Show.
Hey, Artie.
Yeah. Hey, listen, Greg. He still calls me Greg. I've known him for like 20. I don't. I never correct it.
Gary, it's I'm not gonna be in today.
Yeah, but you know. So, anyways, so Kamal says he tells me this amazing story. He told me this story over 15 years ago, and the story was already 10 years old at the time. So this is 25 years old. This story I'm about to tell you. He has a buddy who's a wannabe actor.
The guy's always scheming on how to get into Hollywood projects. He actually introduces himself to people as a background actor, which is, you know, a glorified term for he's an extra. He sits around on a set all day and just stands in the background. But apparently he's got all these theories about how Hollywood works. Well, he calls up Kamal one night and says, hey, so there's this bar I heard about that is on 24th Street that every Tuesday there's it's like a thing, like actors and casting people, you know, they hang out. But you got to know someone to know that's where you got to go on Tuesday nights. Why don't we go, me and you? And I'll bring my acting reel and we'll, you know. And Kamal's like, whatever. All right, we'll go. You know, he thinks the guy's kind of silly. So they go to this bar on that Tuesday night on 24th Street. When they walk up to that bar, laying on the ground in front of the bar, is Christopher Walken with a bloody mouth. There was just a bar fight that just happened that Christopher Walken was involved in. He's laying on the ground.
10 years ago.
This is 25 years ago. This is 10 years before I heard the story. I heard the story 15 years ago. This is 25 years ago. And Kamal's buddy actually does this move where he goes, Chris, are you okay? Hey, my name's Jeff. I'm an actor. Do you know a girl named Kelly? She works in craft services. Kelly, she's a friend of mine. She says she knows you. And Christopher Walken's picking up his teeth, and he goes,
what's your name? It's Jeff. Jeff, I want you to turn around, and I want you to get the fuck out of my face, or I'm going to make sure that nobody ever hears from you again. And Jeff goes, okay. Okay, can I give you my reel? No? Okay. And he runs away. Like, he actually tries to fucking... Yeah, I love that story.
See, you even get the nasal part. You have to force your...
It's the key is Chris has a real stop and go kind of voice where he'll talk every once in a while. He'll stop and then he'll keep going.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah,
I saw an episode of Hawaii Five-0 that he was on where he played a Navy guy and he had blonde hair. This is like 68 or early 70s. But it was him. He was thin and good looking and chiseled face. But then he starts talking. And
His wife is a casting director for a bunch of HBO shows.
Georgina
Walken. And every time I would read for her, I would do my read as whatever I thought was the best approach to that read. And then when we were done, I would do the audition again as her husband.
Did she like it?
She loved it.
No, I'm good.
Yeah, I would come. I remember there was one time I came in audition, just like two lines from an episode of The Sopranos. It was a doctor who said, Johnny, it's just not going to work. We got to let it go. She's like, all right, we'll do it again as my husband.
Johnny, it's not going to work. You got to let him go.
Did you get the part?
Never.
Aww.
Never. No, I only did like two or three auditions. I read for Entourage. I remember reading for Entourage for a character who gets fucked in the ass by a bunch of women with strap-ons. There was an episode where...
Turtle?
The main character of... the star, Adrian's character, whatever his name was.
I forget the name that he played. I know Adrian...
Grenier.
I always want to say Adrian Zamed.
When reproduction. Adrian Grenier, his character goes to like a Comic-Con, and there's a guy who's like a Perez Hilton type of dude at the Comic-Con who's about to bury Aquaman, and they really want to suck up to him and say, hey, you know, can you be a little nicer? You know, we know that you didn't like Aquaman. Maybe you need another chance, or is there anything Adrian can do for you? And he's being really shitty. And then there's a knock on the door of this Perez Hilton kind of character, and it's a bunch of girls outside, half-naked women in, like, bathrobes outside his front door. And the guy says, well, if Adrian sent you up here, just know that there's nothing you can do to change my mind. I'm going to write this story. And the girls all open their robes, and they have strap-ons on.
So that changes his mind.
And then he goes, come on in. And I read that. I had a really, I don't know what it was, but Gary Delabate said something. He was doing something to me that I really thought was unfair.
Mm-hmm.
And I auditioned with a Gary Delaponte voice saying, okay, just, yeah, come on in. Yeah, come on in. And I was hoping to get the part and just do a Gary Delaponte impression of me getting fucked in the ass.
Uh-huh.
And I
9 times.
Yeah. And I didn't get the part, but I was hoping to sneak it, you know, underneath everybody's radar. And I was like, God, it'd be so cool if I get this part. And then I can tell everybody later, like, yeah, you see what I'm doing there? You realize I'm just doing a Gary Delaponte impression and getting fucked in the ass. And I never got the part. So,
hey, before we go, you've been on the certain in a sour shoes.
Yes.
Is that guy, like, legit? Or does he have some issues?
Oh, he definitely has some issues. And I remember him being in the lobby when we were at K-Rock. I remember seeing him in the lobby with like a Casio keyboard at like 5 o'clock.
Ooh! Right.
Yeah.
Well, he's a mimic, right?
He's a savant. I mean, he can copy sounds that are amazing. But yes, he is everything that they as advertised. He's not, from my understanding, I've never worked with him personally. I never spent any time with him personally, but talking to friends at the show who work with him, yes, he is impossible to corral to just get an actual, you know, focus to do something with this ability that he has. So, but yeah, he has an amazing talent for sure.
Craig Gass is at the Punchline all weekend long. Again, for tickets and showtimes, go to punchline.com. Craig, this has been a treat for me. Thank you very much.
And me too, man. I'm always happy to see you, and I don't know why it's taking me so long, but I need to come back to Atlanta more often.
Anytime you're here, you're welcome on whatever I'm doing, and let's hang out next time.
All right, let's plan on it. Go bowling.
I know.
Remember that?
I like to bowl. I like to bowl as well.
I just like to hang with friends, whether it's a nice evening with a barbecue or bowling or throwing a football around in the backyard. I'm just cool with I just want to get as much out of life as possible.
Getting these fucking Alex Jones pop-ups. I don't know why. Can you do Alex Jones before we go?
Brother, how does that? I'm Alex Jones, and I've got to listen, Alex Jones. This is, they smell like sulfur.
Globalists.
Sulfur.
Globalists. They're turning the frogs gay.
All right, guys.
Hillary!
Yes.
Hillary Clinton!
All right, this is Don Imus saying goodbye. You're listening to Radio Labyrinth. And thank you, Craig.
Hooah!
Two Faces Radio.